If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace. To nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for doggy dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS Store. Visit the upsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gibb. I'm your host, Gibson Johns. And today on the show, we have a really great chat with Shamira Ibrahim, who is a culture writer who writes about reality TV for Vulture. And she recently wrote this really great piece centered on the Real Housewives of Atlanta and how sort of nostalgia for the good old days of the show, the golden era of the show, is hindering the current era, this new season's ability to really thrive, both in the minds of fans and also in the dynamics playing out on the show. And we had a really great conversation, and I loved the piece. So I wanted to have Shamira on to go deeper on some of the thoughts that she mentions in the piece, share my thoughts on them. We bring up Roni because that's also another franchise that this idea of nostalgia sort of getting in the way of the future of a franchise sort of plays out on that one as well. So we had a really great conversation, and I really think you'll enjoy it. It's about Atlanta, New York, and kind of we rope other franchises into it as well. Those are some ideas that had sort of been percolating in my mind, but I had not put them into words, and she did such a good job of doing so. So again, really wanted to have her on. I like doing this where I invite a writer on who has written a really kind of thought-provoking article about something to do with Bravo or Real Housewives and just sort of expand on it and to have a really deep conversation about it. So that is today's episode. But before we get to that, I did want to share my thoughts on the Summer House finale, which aired last night. I went to Bravo's official Summer House finale watch party on Tuesday night, the night before it aired. It was really fun. Lots of Bravo fans there, some other Bravo creators there. And then after the episode, Jesse, Kyle, and Carl came out and they played some games with fans, took pictures. And they also said at the watch party that we're going to get a Secrets Revealed episode after the two-part reunion, which I'm really excited about. More footage. And apparently at some point in like the reunion or the Secrets Revealed episode, unclear which episode they were talking about, but there's going to be a big fourth wall breaking moment, apparently. So I'm really excited about that. And I really liked this finale. I thought it was really funny unexpectedly. Like, it wasn't super dramatic, but like, there were so many moments that I was laughing out loud. The entire room was laughing as we were watching it. It started out with the continuation of that, of the Freedom Dinner. And Lexi, honestly, again, I've been going back and forth on this Jesse and Lexi thing so much. She bodied that conversation. I thought she did a really good job taking it to Jesse. She didn't back down. I think it was great to see some backup from Gabby, even though Wes gave her some, I think, kind of merited feedback of how much she was chirping, considering how much, you know, how she has never really had something sort of in the spotlight on the show. But I loved seeing her back up Lexi ultimately. Like, she's a girl's girl. I love seeing how close they were getting, even them hanging out in that bedroom together. Like, they have clearly become good friends. I think that's only a good thing for Gabby, who constantly gets accused of being sort of just like Lindsay's sidekick, and she's so much more than that. So I'm glad to see that from her, and it was nice to see her kind of stick up for Lexi when nobody else really was. I do think Sierra was right when she made the point that, like, one of the differences between her and Wes and Lexi and Jesse is that Wes really made himself way more available to the rest of the house when he was getting with Sierra than Lexi did when she was getting with Jesse. Lexi was isolated from the house, and whether you think that's completely because of Jesse or a combination of Jesse and her own doing, I think it's the latter, but I understand both sides. Ultimately, she was more isolated, and that's a big difference, I think, in these two kind of relationships that keep getting compared. It was also nice to see Wes try to stick up for Jesse in the moment. He doesn't really do that much. So that was nice to see. I also was cracking up when at the end of the dinner, Sierra was like, "Wait, Carl, let's write your post 4 score and 1 year ago. Alluding to Lindsay's like really lengthy post, commemorating everything she's accomplished in the year since Carl broke up with her. I thought that was hilarious. That's the good thing about this group, is like they can get really serious, they can get really dramatic, but they can also like give each other shit for like those same things, you know? And Lindsay laughed that off too. I think it was great. But yeah, I think after that conversation, we see this little sit down quickly with Paige and Jesse. And I think that Paige was right to tell him, like, listen, like, you didn't cheat. Like, you didn't like betray her in some major, huge way. Like, you didn't fuck up in that regard, but you did go too hard too quickly. That was accurate. And he acknowledged that. And that was another moment that I laughed at, when him and Sierra were like, not flirting, but they were like kind of giving each other shit. And Amanda comes over and she's like, "Guys, the body's not even cold yet." Like, they were all just being so funny this episode. I don't know. It made me laugh. And also another funny moment was Sierra's Brantley costume. 6'5", finance, blue eyes, or whatever the fuck it is. I was cracking up. The party theme was scary, and she dressed as a finance bro, which was, again, just, she's the queen of costumes. She's always going to have like a different interpretation of the theme, and I just adore her for that. I was cracking up the whole time anytime they would cut to her with her fly open, the hat, the briefcase, all the things. Another moment from the party that I thought was notable that I would just call out here is, like, so Danielle has come to the house twice this season, and both times, like, she's made these like kind of weird passive aggressive comments to Lindsay. And I just don't understand like where they're coming from. I don't know if it's like, I really don't understand it. This time it was, you know, that Lindsay is DeLulu if she thinks that this is not the end of the road for her on the show, basically. And it's like, one, like, Lindsay's acknowledging, yeah, that like she's in this sort of like moment of change for herself and all those things. But like, the way that it's the delivery from Danielle that I'm not really understanding. It like has this like heat behind it to Lindsay. And it's like, wait, Lindsay's why you're still being able to come back to the house. Like, she's your connection to the house still. So I found that really odd, honestly. And she did it earlier in the summer when she came for the gender reveal party too. And then also during the party, like, of course, like, Jesse can't help himself, and he is openly flirting with like all these young ladies, and he is in the kitchen with them. And another amazing moment was when Sierra like came in to sweep the floor, and she was like, "Get out, like, I'm sweeping out the trash." And that was sort of to like get them out of the house and to break up the moment. And we had these couple moments of Sierra like kind of sticking up for Lexi. And again, I think disproving some of the narrative of like them being pit against each other, or Sierra having a problem with Lexi and Jesse. Like, no, like, Sierra, I think, is doing a good job of handling this kind of weird situation. And we also had this argument between Jesse and Lexi that really broke the fourth wall, because basically Jesse was like, "Listen, like, you can't get mad at me for talking about our relationship with our other friends, because we're on a fucking reality show. And that is the name of the game. Like, we have to talk about different things and different people. That is how this works." I'm glad they were able to acknowledge that, honestly. And I'm glad they kept that in, because I think even viewers need to be reminded of that too, because Lexi and Jesse have been on this, like, they've both been on this, like, intense press tour that, like, is not ending. And they just like keep going at it. They're always popping up on podcasts on these like different, at these different outlets, like talking about this nonstop. And it's like, this is not Scandoval. This is not that serious. Nobody betrayed the other in some crazy, insurmountable, can't come back from it way. Neither one has done that. They both contributed to this split, this doomed relationship. They both contributed to it, okay? But everyone's acting as if it's this like huge betrayal of like epic proportions that has to be milked for everything that it's worth, like in every single press outlet. It's like, let's calm down. You know, like let's give it a rest. All right. So this is a reality show, as Jesse said. So I'm glad they acknowledged that. I was upset that we didn't get that. I mean, like every season on Summer House, at the end of the season, we get the sort of 9 security cam footage squares on the screen, and they all sort of like one by one black out as the season ends. They didn't give that to us this season, which I was kind of nostalgic for. But anyway, we cut forward to Lindsay's delivery in December. I got emotional watching. I thought it was really, really sweet. I think they did a really nice job treating Lindsay's arc kind of coming to a potential end on the show in sort of a mainstay way. I think they handled it really well. They let her explain sort of where her head is at, and they treated her delivery with like such, it was just really sweet moment. And I really loved it. And then we cut forward again. There's kind of this like 180 jump scare of like, okay, like Paige and Craig broke up, and then we're back at Lindsay's apartment, and Paige shows up, Amanda shows up, and Amanda meeting the baby in particular was like so sweet. A lot of the people at the watch party that I was sitting around were sort of wiping away tears in that moment, because it was just sort of like, wow, it's just a reminder of how far the show has come, how far Lindsay has come, sort of the life stage that she really is at. She just had such a great season, I think. And it was really nice to see how that was all treated. And there was a lot of anticipation for this final scene. That was a pickup scene that they filmed months after the season had ended, that we were going to get a lot of Paige and Craig tea. And I thought it was actually a really pleasant surprise that this scene was actually one longer than I thought it would be, and a lot funnier than I thought it would be, because it was sort of like, it was about Paige and Craig, but it was also about Lindsay and Turner, also about Lindsay being a mom, and they were trying her breast milk, like they were just laughing. I just thought it was a really great scene, and I thought it was a preview of what a potential Valley-type spinoff for Summer House could look like. Here we have these three women in their 30s talking about, you know, who they want to marry, who they want to like end up with, having babies, all these different kind of bigger topics, and like, it felt really natural. I just loved it. I thought it was a really, really great scene. And, you know, first we hear from Lindsay about her and Turner, and how like a big thing in their relationship is that she's a really public person, that and that is tied up into her job, how she makes money. And he's a very private person, which he's very much entitled to. And they both, you know, and ultimately she was like, listen, like if I had not gotten pregnant, like I would not have compromised that. Like we just would have broken up because it would have been too different. But because we have this baby and because I got pregnant, we're giving it a shot. And but that is a huge thing in their relationship. It seems as though we'll get a more up-to-date update from Lindsay about that at the reunion, is what I'm sensing from the reunion trailer, which I thought was decent. But then we get the Paige and Craig of it all. And Paige is like, I feel good. And, you know, I didn't realize how much I had changed. Amanda says, yeah, I noticed that, but I didn't want to pry this summer. And Paige is like, I called my dad and he was like, wow, like I just didn't realize how different you were. Like I finally have my daughter back. And that's when you know, right? Like parents know all. And so if he's saying that to her, like he's right, you know, and Paige is lighter already in this scene. You know, she said that one of the moments, the light bulb moment for her was when Craig was like, damn, like, don't you just fantasize about like celebrating the holidays with our kids? And she was like, actually I don't, which is harsh, but like, again, like she's acknowledging her truth, right? And she's admitting it. She's allowing herself to admit it. And that takes strength. And she says she called him, told him this. And then he was like, let's talk in person in December. And in that in-person meeting, he tells her, I wish you wouldn't have done this before you saw the ring. And another light bulb moment for her was like, in that moment, she wasn't sure if he was lying about the ring or not. And Lindsay was like, oh, I want to see the ring. Like, are we ever going to see this ring? And Paige is like, no, there was never a ring, Lindsay. Like, again, she's had these sort of like light bulb moments that I think have confirmed her suspicions, confirmed her gut feeling, and confirmed her decision in a big way. The last one being that when those cheating rumors were sort of boiling up, which I think is around the time that this scene was filmed. I'm guessing that's sort of why she wanted to film this scene, honestly. She texted him like, I'm getting annihilated. Can you just like dispel it? It'd be really easy if you just like kind of like simmer this a little bit. And he refused to. And they haven't talked since then. At least when they filmed this scene. So I thought it was a really great scene. And actually, it's really notable that like they cut out the part from the trailer that was teased for this scene, which was her talking about Craig messaging other girls. That was in the trailer for the season. And that was a sort of surprise drop of this extra footage. And they cut it out of the final episode. I think that's a really, that's a huge notable, I mean, this has happened a lot, right? Where we see footage in a preview or a teaser or a trailer, and it is not ultimately in the...
This episode sponsored by Hume Health. You ever wonder if your routine is actually working or if you're just hoping it is? The Hume Band gives you real answers. It tracks your body 24/7, heart rate, sleep stages, recovery, stress, even blood oxygen, so you can see exactly how your habits impact your health. Not just steps, real data. You'll start to notice patterns, like how a bad night of sleep affects your recovery or how stress is holding you back. And instead of guessing what to fix, the app gives you clear, personalized insights based on your data, so you can stop second-guessing and start making smarter decisions for your body. Visit HumeHealth.com to get the Hume Band today.
Final cut of the episode. And I think that that is a really big omission that they have to know that fans are going to notice that. So I'm curious if there's going to be blowback about that. But yeah, I thought it was a really great finale. Again, not super highly dramatic, but like I just was laughing a lot. You know, it was a well-done episode. I really do think that. So anyway, those are my thoughts on the Summer House finale. Keep listening for my chat with Shamira Ibrahim, all about how nostalgia is impacting Real Housewives, more specifically the Real Housewives of Atlanta and New York. Check out her writing about reality TV on Vulture. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbling with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll be back tomorrow with one more episode this week, all about, you guessed it, The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives Season 2. I want to gab. All right, today we're gabbing with Shamira Ibrahim, who recently wrote a piece for Vulture headlined, "Could Real Housewives of Atlanta Suffer the Same Fate as Roni?" She is a culture writer, and I wanted to have Shamira on to talk about this piece because I think that she put into words things that I have been sort of thinking but couldn't really land on, and she did such a good job of articulating what I've been sort of feeling about Atlanta. And so I wanted to sort of unpack some of the ideas that Shamira got into in her piece. So Shamira, thank you for hopping on. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for the invite, Gibson. Happy to be here.
Of course. So I'm curious, before we get into the piece itself, how are you feeling about the state and status of the Real Housewives of Atlanta going into season 16? There was a lot riding on it because the show had not been in
Absolutely.
Kind of great shape. So what were you sort of feeling going into this current season?
Going into the season, I was definitely apprehensive, right? Like I get really weary about reboot seasons that take too long to promote, right? You know, yeah. And so just the long wait time, it was over a year, right, where there was a lot of rumor mongering about what was happening. I believe the incident that happened with Kenya that happened at her salon was last summer. So we had like
been a long time.
Whole year of just guessing about what the season was going to be. And those things can go well or badly. Obviously, we saw with New York, there was a lot of heavy backlash. And so I think I was apprehensive in the fact that I felt like Bravo fans have become increasingly unwilling to like extend grace for a new show or a show to reset itself. And people want things to kind of be established out the gate. And I was like, this is going to be a hard battle to win for no matter what the franchise is.
100%. And I feel like when it came down to it, you know, they have an amazing combo of newbies and kind of OGs or quasi OGs. Like they did a good job mm-hmm. in that regard. Like it's a great ratio of women I feel like that we're familiar with
right.
and new to us. But obviously, you mentioned like the Kenya situation kind of preceded the season in ways that sort of,
right.
I think, not in everybody's eyes, but I think especially in sort of like really hardcore Kenya fans' eyes, like it sort of set the season. It sort of started from five steps back in some ways. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I feel like the first six to seven weeks were just consumed in litigating Kenya's status on the show, right? Which she takes up a huge presence, whether she's on it or off it, because of what an icon status she's achieved. So it's a testament to what she's accomplished, to be fair, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
but it really did allow people to talk about what was going on in the show, which I enjoyed, right? Like I thought the show got off to a strong start. I still enjoy it. I think it's tracking well for so many new people in the mix. Like to give something compelling every week. The last 3 weeks of reality television between Housewives of Atlanta and The Valley have just been out of this world, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So good.
And so I felt like with everyone talking about whether Kenya was done wrong or right, you know, I get that we can argue about that as fans, as people. I've watched it since day one, season one, so I get it. But at the same time, it's making it impossible to talk about what makes the show work. And I think Kenya, to her credit, said, and I know people are using it as a dig against her, you know, a few seasons ago about Nene, which is no one is bigger than the show. But the reality is no one is bigger than the show, right? We're 16 years in. Like, you have to bring in new blood. You have to figure out new ways for characters to evolve. Having people in 16 years in, what we're getting to a point of is like, hey, we're showing our version of reality that we're not able to talk about. And that's kind of the distinction you see between the newbies and the legacy cast members, right? Like, you see Portia struggling because she can't talk about her personal life, but then she also has very strict rules about how she talks about her personal life, right? Mm-hmm. And Shamia is a newcomer who's ready to talk about her personal life because technically she's new, but her anchor to the show is not, right? And so I feel like too many of the fans are stuck in that model of reality television and not realizing that with the new cast comes the opportunity to talk about new things. And we're not talking about new things.
Yeah.
We're talking about season 9. You know, it's a little bit much for me.
I feel like, I mean, there's a lot of great parts of this piece, but I'm curious when you first started to notice the issue that you say a viewership focused on reminiscing is also one that is unable to actively participate in the narrative progression of its favorite series. So it's kind of what you were just saying. It's like, we are always thinking about, we're thinking about season 9. We're thinking about Nene and her impact on Nene, you know, even though she's not bigger than the show, she still sort of lords over sort of the lore of Atlanta, right? I mean, I also think of the idea of Phaedra coming back. Like, that is so loaded and there's so much involved in that idea too. Like, when did you first start to notice these things in a way that you were like, okay, I need to sort of put pen to paper and get some of these thoughts out?
Right. So I've been thinking about this for a while. I write about reality TV pretty regularly. I do the recaps of Potomac and formerly Dubai on Vulture, you know, RIP, hopefully it comes back. But so alongside the distinguished Brian Moylan and Mike, you know, we talk a fair amount about just the reality of what the reality TV ecosystem is. And so the first time I noticed amongst a lot of my other peers that this was becoming a problem was actually with New York. When New York announced the reboot, how resistant people were to it before we even saw an episode. And as someone who grew up in the city and as someone who loves New York deeply, like the show and the city, you know, I kind of found myself a little at odds with the general fan opinion. Like, I think Bethany is an icon. I think Ramona is an icon, all things notwithstanding or whatever. I think Luann, all of them are fantastic people. But I also know they're either at or approaching 60, most of them, most living in Florida. And like the last 3 seasons, we just saw them get drunk a lot, right? Which, like, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a drug extravaganza on TV, but they're not working, they're not dating, they're not really doing much, but we have fond memories. And so watching people get so reactive to the new girls being like, oh, they're just influencers. Like, well, yes, the new girls in New York, guess what they are? They're influencers who hang out in the Lower East Side and hang out in Park Slope. And they, you know, carry their two baby wide strollers down Fifth Avenue. That is what the new young influencer New York is. Now, I do think the casting had issues, as we've come to see, right? I don't think people were wrong to pick up on that. But I did think people were so resistant to the idea that the conversation about New York is not going to be old money wealth anymore. Well, yeah, that's not what 30-year-olds in New York do, right? And so when we got to Atlanta, I felt the same thing. We're pulling the same Nene clips from season 6, season 5, season 4, right? The last 2 seasons Nene was on the show, she was unbearable to watch or to work with from what has been reported, right? You know, she was not opening up on camera. She was hostile to her teammates, to her colleagues, to her coworkers, the production crew. Let's not forget the infamous debate over what happened in that closet, right? We still don't really know. So, like, we're like, our fondness for the heyday of Atlanta, where every episode you could find a laugh over something as innocuous as, you know, like Sheree and Nene just making faces at each other, right? You know,
anything like, to make you laugh. Yeah,
exactly. Anything created comedy out of like the innocuous moments. We're so stuck on that that we haven't been able to figure out. We have to trust another crew to give us that. And I do think they're trying to give us that. I do think Angela is a classic housewife who's clearly studied the show and, as we know, has been invited for multiple years, and also like operates at a level of ease that makes her compelling to watch, right? You know, I think, you know, Shamira is shining on the screen in a way that I did not see happening for her, right? Like, I've seen her on camera since season 5. I never thought to myself, oh, she needs to be a housewife. Now I'm like, oh, she needs to be a housewife.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't believe she waited so long, right?
Yeah.
You know, even Britt, I know she's a controversial person on the show for many reasons, right? But I do think you need someone who you can't stand on the show, right? And like, we all know that quite well because Kenya was like that kind of anti-hero for so long. And I don't think Britt has the chops to get to that level. Mm-hmm. But you do need someone that you love to hate, whether it's going to be Britt or somebody else. Like, there's clearly the pieces there for the next era to be amazing. And instead, we're arguing over whether or not Phaedra will save the show. And like, listen, I love Phaedra. She's like my controversial fave. Don't get me wrong. I'm not anticipating what she's going to burn this season.
Right. Okay, there's so much in there that I want to unpack. But towards the beginning of your piece, you use an example of Portia at that final dinner in Nashville, where she basically shuts down because to sort of punish Angela. And you say, you know, this is a classic housewife tactic to cut someone down to size. You can simply refuse to interact with them in the hopes that they will ultimately eliminate their camera time. It is also, in a metaphorical sense, the perfect encapsulation of the series' woes. The old guard of housewives is presenting the newer crop from thriving. So there's obviously a power dynamic here too, right? It's
right,
like forces
right.
coming in. And I think it was supposed to be her and Kenya sort of carrying the burden together of this new era of the show. And then now it's sort of all on Portia, so like that's playing into it as well. But in some ways that moment really didn't work for Portia in my mind, because like I didn't like how she was shutting down, and it sort of endeared me to Angela in that moment of like, they're trying here, you know what I mean? Like, and it didn't land for Portia, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it totally backfired. Like, it only, like, a moment, a power play like that only works if everybody gets in line, right? So like, if Portia does it and everyone decides, okay, we're gonna talk to Portia now, and we're all gonna cut Angela out, then yeah, Angela is rightfully humiliated. And even if it makes it on camera, it's an embarrassment, right? Like, even though there's a probability that it doesn't make it on camera, right? Like, that's a power play that, for example, Gisele Bryant uses so well, right?
Yes.
You know, when she's done with you, she's just no longer going to interact with you, right? You know,
so
and
true.
We've seen
it's
it. And,
through line.
And to her credit, every one of her enemies has fallen, right? You know, like,
look who's still standing.
Works, right?
Yep.
Exactly. So I get why Portia tried to play that tactic of like,
no one's going to play.
Exactly. Right. You know, I get why it's like, okay, I'm going to show you exactly how it works. We've seen her do it in the last week's episode where, in retaliation against what she felt like Drew was doing with her ex-partner, she decides to meet with Drew's still estranged husband. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And decides to do that coincidentally. Oh, she was just in the area with Shamira. Sure. Whatever. Fine. Right. You know, but I do think it's a testament to like how when a new guard comes in, and you're trying to play these power dynamics, either the guard will choose to fall in line, which is an issue you've seen on a show like Potomac, where everyone knows you kind of have to get on Giselle's good side to really thrive, right? And it creates issues with like the back and forth of the tension on the show. Or the new guard is like, actually, no, this is our show. We were asked to be on here and we're going to tell our own stories, which is what they're trying to do, right? To mixed results. I think Angela by far is the most successful at it.
Definitely.
I'm eager to see more from Kelly. Like Kelly, I get some pieces, but I'm not quite there yet. And I think Britt is showing us that it's just not necessarily, you know, going over well with the cast. And so what I find is that like watching Portia clearly struggle on her back foot reminds me of what Ebony Williams said about her debut on New York, right? Where she had a planned story. You know, she had a partner. They were planning to have a child. That was going to be the story she told on television. That engagement ended suddenly. Now she's on there not knowing what part of herself to share. And the parts of herself she chose to share didn't really get received well by fans. I think that's where Portia is. She's kind of on her back foot, right? Like she planned on being open about her divorce, right? That was kind of what endeared us to her. I think it was season 6 or 7 when her and Gordell were going through the divorce, and we saw it all on television. Like her packing up the boxes, her crying, you know, Cordell going on camera talking about her mom. Like that was real television, right? And now, of course, she can't do that anymore. She can really only film in her mom's house, right? You know, which is also giving her filming limitations because
definitely.
She said in interviews that it's an hour away. So now she's always late for casting times, right? Or call times. I think when you see that and you realize like she's scrambling to figure out how to fit herself in. And so when you think about it in that dynamic, I was like, oh, she's trying to exert control and it's not working. And the new girls are calling her bluff and she's completely stumbling in it. And you can tell that it's frustrating her and she's trying to explain herself publicly because she knows it didn't come off well. And I feel bad for her, but you know, we all have to have a bad season, so she'll be okay.
Totally. And it's like, she's Portia Williams. Like she will, like it's sort of, especially with the first season back, there's just so much for her specifically, exactly. There was so much riding on it and so much involved in it. Like, mm-hmm. You know, she can't talk about the divorce. She has to film in her mom's house. Her friendship with Shimia is on rocky ground. She doesn't have Kenya in there to sort of, you know, again,
exactly. Carry
that burden. So like, and you say like Kenya and Portia are the only two sort of classic era Atlanta housewives who are sort of in a big way on this season. And they both have these unexpected mm-hmm. hiccups. Let's say neither of those hiccups happen. Let's say Portia could talk very openly about the Simon stuff. Let's say Kenya didn't pull that stunt and this is an alternate universe. But do you think that you would still feel mm-hmm. this way about the nostalgia sort of taking away from Atlanta and the way that it is if they hadn't had the hiccups and they were having like this amazing season together?
Yeah. I get what you mean. I think yes, right?
Okay.
And I think in that circumstance, though, I would have focused more on the fans and the show, right?
Yeah.
I think that the show in that case would be doing what it wants to do and trying to develop something further. But I do think in part of this, it's a two-sided conversation. It's what the show was trying to do and what the fans are trying to do, right? You know, and like, this is a very participatory experience, right? Like, you know, we all discuss it in real time. The show tries to create the effect of how it is like to post it in real time. We clip tweets, Reddit posts, podcasts. You've been featured on the show before, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, like having different parts of the experience make the show makes us all feel very invested in it, right? But then it also requires us to hold ourselves accountable. It's like, I remember if it was last season, the season prior, where every week NeNe trended on a Sunday night, right? You know, they made sure everyone was like, this show was not the same without NeNe. And that sounds great in concept. I get it. But then you're not talking about the show anymore, right? Like you're watching a show on television and actively talking about, you know, 10 years ago. And that's fine. But then maybe watch 10 years ago. I'm sure.
Yeah, rewatch
NBC
it.
NBC would like the ratings. But like, also like, if it's upsetting you that much, I really would prefer for people to just go on Peacock. You know, and watch the old seasons.
Yeah, totally. I feel like there's this almost implication that like, if you want the show to succeed in the future in season 16 and beyond, it's almost like in some sort of cohorts of fans' minds, like that's almost like disrespecting the past. And it's sort of like, you know,
right.
this is the house that NeNe built. This is the house that Kenya built. And like, nobody's denying that. Like that is fact.
Right,
you know? Like,
right.
That is fact. Like
exactly.
Atlanta got to the point that it did because of some of those amazing early cast members who were around for 10 seasons, you know, like that. Nobody's denying mm-hmm. that. But also, like, I'm speaking for myself, like, I want this show to thrive in the way that maybe not, it's not going to thrive in the same way that it did in seasons, you know,
right.
1 through 8 or whatever it was. But like, it has the ability, it has the tools, it has the resources to do that in sort of a new way. But it's almost like so many people like don't want it. Like, when it has bad ratings, they almost like take glee out of it. And I'm like, wait.
Right.
It's like what do we, that's not like karma for what Ken, like, I don't know. It's hard to put into words, but it's like, it's a frustration that I find in myself because I'm like, let's uplift this show. Like you're saying, like there's
right,
so many
right.
good things happening here.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think a part of it is that we're in denial that we're in like late stage reality television. Right.
Right.
And when I say that, I don't mean that like it's going to decline the next couple of years. I more so mean that we're not ever going to have what we had in like 2010, right? Or 2009, where like, oh, a producer gets a cast of women and says, hey, we're trying to film this documentary. And you get really organic reactions of people who have no idea what the potential impact of this can be, right? You know, like NeNe Leakes season 1 had no idea she was going to be a megastar, right? You know,
right.
She was a suburban housewife who had a husband who was paying most of the bills and they were underwater in their mortgage, right? Like that was kind of what they were dealing with. Now, you know, anybody who goes on these shows, no matter what, you know, knows that there's a possibility to make something out of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the tip top of that opportunity is like, you know, Garcelle, right? Who like rejuvenated her career, gave herself a ton of production deals, did a best-selling book, launched a podcast, did like 5 or 6 you know, all-time things for an aging Black actress in Hollywood just off of restoring her popularity via reality television, right? These are things that are available. Kenya is a 90s icon. She's not lying when she says that, right? There's not a sitcom I watched in the 90s that she didn't do a guest appearance on, right? But Real Housewives made a second way for her to be able to build all these opportunities that hopefully, you know, result in the salon thriving even further, right? Everybody who gets called now or gets told about a possible opportunity knows that. Everybody is going to have a level of savvy and self-production to self-promote. Like, that is going to be the nature of it. I think what viewers have to be confident about is that no one is actually that good of a self-producer, right? Like, people want to be, and there's like the rare exceptions, like a Kyle or a Lisa Vanderpump. I think Garcelle had a good season or two where she really showed those chops. But I think realistically, in you trying to show some other version of yourself and not show your true personality, inevitably the real you seeps through, right? It might not be sitting in a, you know, resort and overhearing the person talk about fucking your husband, right? But like, in some way, like, parts of your personality that you don't like to showcase will come out, and we will have to evaluate that. And I think fans have to have more confidence in the fact that we will get to know these women, even if they come on with, you know, fresh lace, you know, designer pulls, all the things, season one, that we usually don't see season one anymore. Even if they come with all that, we're going to find out who these women are one way or the other, right? You know, Britt got 9 episodes, 10 episodes to ultimately for us to land on, oh, she's kind of annoying, you know, like, you know, and that's fine. Like, that's a fine way to discover a person. We're not going to have the same casual, oh, we're going to see them at work doing this thing. Like, we now know anytime we see a brand, more than likely they're paid to promote it. And that's okay. But like, we have to evolve with that, because fantasizing about replicating the first 5 seasons of any show's heyday is impossible.
Very well said. Very well said.
USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks, or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at usaa.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.
How much do you think, you talked about sort of where we've all mostly, I think, collectively landed with Britt, I would say, how much do you think the Kenya situation has contributed to how fans were able to receive her big picture wise? Because I kind of feel like the show isn't really hung up on the Kenya situation anymore. Like, I feel like we kind of moved past it within the season.
Absolutely.
And I feel like we've seen Britt enough outside of that. But how do you think that has impacted how she was received by fans up until this point?
I think it didn't do her any favors, right? But I do think that she would have had an opportunity to spin it in her favor. And by that, I mean, like, if you come in the gate having such a high conflict with a major cast member, that's not anything new. I know people are, like, very aggravated about it, that it's Kenya she dared to...
It's a classic move.
Exactly. Kenya did it herself when she first came on the show, right? You know, she first was abrasive to the OGs. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, everyone knows what they're doing when they do that, right? But, like, if you have such a conflict that goes so off the rails the way that Brits did, right, I think that becomes an opportunity for you to introduce people to yourself, right? You know, you have to figure out, okay, yes, I get that you know me from this hostile interaction, but this is who I am in this capacity, right? And I think she's tried to do that. She just isn't warm enough on camera for it to really deliver. So we just end up with these, like, really disjointed scenes of, like, her and her family and, like, us understanding that there's tension and conflict, but us not really understanding why or how or having enough knowledge of her to care to find out more, right? You know? And that's unfortunate, because there's so much there. What it reminds me of a little bit is what happened between Wendy and NECA. And I had the opportunity to interview NECA around that time for Vulture. You know, obviously, NECA comes on the show. She has a connection to Wendy through family connections. We know it's hostile. They come out the gate talking about it. And it unfortunately consumed
it
a lot of what NECA has to talk about, right? You know, and I do think NECA herself also tried to talk about different things, right? You know, NECA had a fertility journey she was trying to go on, right? She was building a house basically by herself because her husband was traveling so much, right? Trying to figure out, like, what her life is going to be now after, like, years of considering herself, like, a legal evil. Now you're doing a whole different lifestyle thing, right? Like, all those were actually really interesting, but she was never able to successfully draw attention to that, and it consumed so much. And that's in a fan base that actually isn't that loyal to Wendy in the way that people are loyal to Kenya, right? You know, so that's just like, okay, we kind of like you, but we understand that you are the legend on the show, right? When you go to Atlanta, Kenya is that pillar. It's like Kenya, Nene, and kind of everybody else, right? You know, and in that respect, like, it automatically made people feel defensive. Like, okay, we have spent 8 years writing for Kenya when she's been unfairly villainized. the last 3 years of her arc have kind of been a redemption arc of her kind of being more friendly, amicable with the other girls, showing softer parts of herself, showing more insecurities that aren't necessarily rooted in her having conflicts with the woman. And so this kind of breaks that fantasy of like, okay, Kenya's calming down. She's a mom now. She traveled. Now, oh no, this is the Kenya we've always known. So I get why fans were immediately defensive and immediately said, we have to figure out why Kenya did this, because it's a setback for her, right? Obviously, it's checks she's not getting.
Of course.
And so I do think that for Brit, like, unfortunately, she just didn't know how to flip it right. You know, I think that's a skill that requires like having seasons on camera.
Yeah, totally. You know? Yeah.
And she just was too early to that moment.
And I also think it's like we've talked about the strength of the other newbies. We've talked about Angela mm-hmm. being just like, I mean, I feel like with every week, Angela just building this momentum and just sort of like showing how good she is at this and just like how mm-hmm. open and funny and all these different things. Kelly, I think, mm-hmm. is great. Like Brit is, I think even without the Kenya situation, I think that Brit would have ended up as sort of in that third place in those three true newbies. Shamia, I think, is a slightly different category of newbie. But like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I also think she's not being very authentic and just sort of kind of playing up certain things that aren't totally true about herself. But like,
right,
you know,
right.
you talked about sort of the economy of fan attention is crucial for a housewife's future. And I feel like Angela has, like I just said, has done an amazing job at sort of cultivating that over her mm-hmm. time on this first season. I think Kelly, I think you said this, like she kind of comes out the gate pretty strong. She hosts all these events. They're pretty explosive. Like she's kind of been pretty consistent in that way, whereas Angela's right. had sort of like a more kind of steady trajectory.
Exactly.
Do you agree with sort of that divide and sort of the fan attention of when it comes to these newbies and sort of how it's played out?
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear in what needs to be done there, right? You know, I think that Kelly, her propensity for events is always going to be an asset, right? You
yeah,
need
totally.
Someone who's going to be able to shut down a luxury store, right? Like you need that person, right?
Yeah.
And Kelly being willing to do that automatically gives her value in the show. I think people have complained that it feels too pedestrian. We don't see the luxury anymore. Fine. Here comes the luxury, right? You know, but I do think when it comes to personal story, we're not there yet with Kelly. And I think I'm fine with giving 2 to 3 seasons for that to be there yet. I was, yeah. for example, very bullish very early on Drew Sidora, right? You know, I've known about Drew Sidora for a long time. You know, I watched the game when she was on it. Like, you know, I'm a fan of hers, right? It, as much as, you know, I would consider myself a fan of hers. And I think I found it fascinating that like she had so much pushback for like not being authentic about her story or like, you know, being prone to liars. I'm sorry. I like my housewives a little delusional and narcissistic. So I honestly did not care that she laughed so much. Like I thought she needed to be caught in her lies, right? But like,
sure.
you know,
fine.
And she, you know, if she wants to sit here and sell the fantasy and then have the fantasy, like the win, get out of her sails over and over again, I'm down for that. Luann de la Salle spent 3 seasons in delusion on New York, right? Until she had to rebuild herself. And now Drew's doing something very brave, which is like being fairly transparent about how hostile her family situation is right now, right? You know, and I think only now are people starting to come around to like, okay, Drew was sharing it, right? And it took, she's been on it for 3 seasons, right? So I'm fine with giving a Kelly like 2 to 3 seasons to get there, because it is true, she did kind of peter up in the background. But when you have, you know, a friendship breakup, you know,
yeah, it's a lot to contend with.
Facilitating outside babies, right? Like to make yourself in the mix, it's difficult. So I'm fine with giving her an extra. She shows that she's willing to play ball, right? You know,
yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, for sure. You also write that nostalgia can be blinding. Atlanta's golden era still had its flaws. I think that's a really crucial thing to point out, because as you said, NeNe wasn't in her best form at the end of her run on this show.
Right.
And the past couple seasons of the show have not been very good, like kind of ever since mm-hmm. the COVID seasons. Like it just hasn't mm-hmm. been in tip-top shape. And I think that's the point where you bring up Roni, and we've talked about this a little bit earlier, but like that also wasn't in the best shape though either before they got right. their reboot. Like that last season of the show was not a good season of Real Housewives. Like it just wasn't.
Right.
Not that they couldn't have righted the ship in a different way, but like, I don't know. I think that that's crucial to point out, because when we think about this nostalgia that sort of is a cloud over some of these franchises, we're really thinking not 3-4 years ago. We're thinking 6, 8, 10 years ago.
And yeah, I was going to say 10 years ago. Like, we're 2025 now. I think some of the biggest moments in Housewives happened, the ones that are constantly quoted, the heyday, like 2015, right? You know, I think a lot of people, it's hard to like think about because Housewives and the internet are so enmeshed, right? Like their rise came around the same time as like social media and Twitter and Reddit really, really blew up, right? So they're like the backbone of like the internet vocabulary. Like people I know who have never watched a single scene of, you know, Atlanta will say, will comment about white refrigerators or talk about a lie that Todd, you know, that Todd came, right? Like the fact that my friend, oh, this is a scheme that Todd cooked up. She has never watched an episode of the show or like, you know, making references like the lies, uh-huh. right? Like, you know,
or this ain't the Oscars, is it?
Exactly. You know, and like we could go back and forth all day and those things have become internet vocabulary, right? Mm-hmm. I get why it's so comforting to sit there because it's not like we're just doing it in Housewives conversation. It's literally, if you're on the internet any given day, you're quoting Housewives, right?
Pop
you're
working to Housewives. Yeah, totally.
Exactly. Like, if there's no way to be a cultural writer, a cultural thinker, or whatever, without acknowledging Bravo, like it's just impossible, right? And so when you do that, you sit on those memories over and over and over again. But you know, it kind of reminds me of like, so I grew up, as many did in this era of like watching soaps with my mom, right? In my aunties, right. Like I was in General Hospital, Passions. You know, like had like Passions with Mike Jam. Like I was talking to friends about it all the time. Like, oh my God, there's this crazy family called the Lopez Fitzgerald and there's witchcraft and it gets really weird and there's an animated doll. I went back and watched some of those episodes and as you know, soaps tape every day. So it's a lot of episodes to get through. I was so excited for like the first 30 episodes, right? I'm like, oh my God, I'm in it. I forgot how crazy this is. I forgot the show started with Sheridan Cray pretending to be besties with Princess Diana. Like, and
oh my God, stop.
By a month in, I was like, this is a slog to get through. Not because the show changed, right? But because it's different when you go through the experience in real time and it's a memory you hold on to. Versus when you sit and you look at like, okay, there are some high moments, but there was a week of nonsense. There was a week where I was waiting for two couples to kiss and they didn't do it for seven episodes, you know? And I think like, that's how I kind of think about how people talk about reality TV. It's like, yeah, you're thinking about the time that Mimi closed the laptop, right? On that COVID season, but the show never bounced back before or after that, right? You know, we were talking about, we had Drew singing in front of her husband at a reunion for a reason I still don't understand.
Truly.
You know?
Truly.
Like, we had a season of us just wondering, is Drew in a lesbian relationship or not, or why? And we just kind of didn't revisit it. Like, fine. I mean, I guess we did just revisit it.
We just did, but like, I kind of forgot about it up until then.
Exactly, you know? And so we had so many of these, like, random attempts to tell a story. Like, listen, Sonia Richards Ross, crap legend, right? You know, happy that she is covering sports for NBC Olympics. Not meant for reality television.
Not made for this. No. Great woman, but not made for this. No.
Exactly. Beautiful family, all the things, right? You know, and we had to watch that. And so I'm sitting here and people be like, this is so awful. I'm like, oh, I've watched some unwatchable television before, right? Like I have sat there and watched, you know, like some of the more obscure, irrelevant episodes of reality television where nothing was accomplished. Like that lost 2 years of COVID where everyone was just playing a game in a house somewhere, right? Like there had to be a proper. So like, that is not what this is. And I think anybody who insists that that's what this season is just doing themselves a disservice because you want to cling to that memory.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I feel like I also forget, honestly, myself, is like, you sometimes you have to sit through a bad season or two of Housewives for it to figure itself out and get to that good place again. Like, not every franchise is going to be in good form at the same time anymore. That's just not, they're all at different trajectories in their run. Going off that, I'm curious what you think about the idea that, like, we're talking about Atlanta and New York a lot, and I feel like you're right, these are the two that have really been, that I've really had to have to work the hardest to get out from under that cloud of the nostalgia for the good old days of these shows. But why do you think that that doesn't burden a franchise like OC? Or why does that not burden, I guess it right now Jersey's in this weird, precarious position where it kind of is contending with that in real time. Potomac, I feel like it maybe is earlier in its run, so it doesn't really have that. But like, why do you think it doesn't affect OC in the same way?
One thing about OC is that they've been good about doing resets. Like they do like the kind of nostalgia of bringing back older people.
Right.
You know, we brought back Tamara, obviously. We brought back a lot of classic early era OC Heather, Housewives. Yeah. But I think one of the big things that they do is like if you're kind of just tracking down for a couple seasons, they're way more vocal about giving people a break. They're way more vocal to say, Vicky, you need to take a break. You don't need to be here anymore, right? And I think that allows like a level of accepting people coming in and out on that show that doesn't happen a lot of other shows, right? Like, even though people don't do as much nostalgia for Beverly Hills, it is very clear to everybody that we made this like Faustian contract that this is Kyle's house and everything lives and dies by whether or not Kyle is okay with it, which is okay. Like, you know, I'm not necessarily a big fan of it, but like, if that's the contract we've accepted, it's the contract we've accepted, right? And I think that in those kind of contexts, it really dictates how we are okay or not okay with just like a lot of fluctuation. Kyle is like, people can come in and out. I'm always going to be here. And she's the anchor, right? You know, on Beverly Hills, people kind of float in and out, but you have the sense of like, they'll probably come back in 4 years. They'll probably come back in 5 years where things are a little bit normal. So there's not like this need to like fight to reclaim a housewife in the same way, right? Like in New York and Atlanta, when you're gone, a lot of times you're just gone, right? You know, sometimes, and to be fair, the personalities in New York and Atlanta are just more prone to like caustic actions that sever the relationship.
Sure. Yeah, right? Yeah. They really toe the line.
It's like you're either in or you're like,
or you've crossed the line, right? And you'll never. Right, exactly. Like, yeah, it's true.
I think if you were to tell someone 10 years ago that Bethany and Andy Cohen would not be on speaking terms, they would be like, that's impossible. But it became very possible very quickly.
Yeah,
very. And so I think that also shifts kind of part of the dynamic, right? Because if the new girls or the girls who are kind of constant aren't willing to play the game of like, yes, this is how it goes. We mix and mingle. We do something new. If they're going to make the climate of, and I'm using this word a little loosely, but it is what essentially happens on the show, hazing when people come on, right? You know, like, you have to fall in line with us. If not, you're not going to get the camera time. If not, we're going to, you know, badmouth you in press interviews, all that. It creates a climate where now the fans are treating it a little bit more like wrestling, right? Like, we have our camps,
right?
We stand by our camps. And if you turn heel, we might be shocked, but like, we're in the camps of our favorite, you know, performers, right? You know, and that's the climate that happens on an Atlanta and a New York in a way that doesn't necessarily happen on an OC, right? Or a Potomac, because it's too early. But even then in Potomac, we're about to hit, you know, we're 10 seasons in, and Candace's fans, you know, are louder than ever, right? You know, Monique's fans, she hasn't been on since season 5. I don't know what
we're still talking about
anymore,
it, though.
Right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. In my mind, and I think I maintain this, which is like, I do think that every franchise should maintain some sort of connection to its origins or to its quasi origins with these like legacy women. Even if they weren't OGs, they joined in, as you said, sort of the golden era of that franchise. Mm-hmm. And whether that is just having one or two representatives of that to sort of, I just feel like it anchors a franchise in a necessary way. So you agree with that? You agree that that is essential for most of these franchises?
I think so. I think the person who's done the best on that this season in Atlanta is actually Cynthia, right?
I was about to bring up Cynthia. Yeah, let's talk about it.
I think Cynthia has like mastered the role of being friend of. She's kind of floated around different franchises at this point, right? But like the way that she kind of just like blinks in to like decompress the tension, to also help establish for the audience this is the conflict, right? Because that's very key. Like, it's not necessarily always clear what the actual issue is and people are fighting. And so someone like Cynthia being like, what is your actual issue with this person? What is actually wrong here? Also just provide some grounding. And also she's just like, I've done this. I know what happens, right? She's had a massive fallout herself with NeNe. Mm. And her and NeNe are back on speaking terms, right? Like,
right.
So I think she offers a, like, what I liken it to is like, on NBA teams, this is like a little rift, I guess, but in NBA rosters, you have your starting five. Those are like the superstars and the ones who are getting big money, right? You know, and then you have your bench players who come in and do rotation. There's always, almost always one slot for a veteran player, right? Like someone who's been in the league 15 years, doesn't have the same power they used to have, doesn't have the same athleticism they used to have, but provides mentorship, right? Mm-hmm. They sit there and say, hey, you're doing too much with these fouls. You need to pull back. Hey, I know you're mad at the coach. This is not the right battle you want to fight. Save this battle for the next thing, right? Or is the one who will get the foul because I can afford to take the foul. You can't. We need you to play, right? Things like that. That's what like a Cynthia plays, right? Of like, hey, you're pushing too hard and you're looking unhinged. Let me remind you what you can do here to communicate what you're actually feeling, right? I think she did that for Portia numerous times this season already, right? Just being like, let's try to communicate what you mean. Like, she tried to save Portia on the Angela and Charles thing. Don't think she did a good job, but she tried her hardest,
she tried.
Right? You know,
she tried.
And so I think that those sort of connections are valuable. And that's what I see happening for the next season. I know John Hamm said, bring like the old New York Housewives, the new New York Housewives together. I don't think a mashup is perfect, but I do think like having a Luann, right, perhaps, right, who is out on the scene a little bit more in New York,
sure,
be able to say like, hey, come over to my cabaret show or whatever, right? Like offers a continuance that allows us to be like, okay, there's investment here. This is part of the New York City scene. This is something we already care about. Luann's cabaret. I have plenty of friends who've gone. They've all had a fantastic time. You know, that is the way I think we can continue that. I think the problem is it's a good check and the Legacy Girls want to be stars, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
and they are and stars. So,
exactly. And to convince them like, hey, you are the icon you are. You get the waiting lines on BravoCon because of the icons that you are, but also you need to see the little ground. Is also like admitting that like it's time for new stars to shine in a way that makes people a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, I never thought about that as a potential solution for New York specifically, where it's like they don't even need to be like full time, like
right,
friends of. They can just like if they host a cocktail party, if they bring them to the cabaret show, if
mm-hmm.
you know they film for Dorina's radio show, even it's like there's that slight connection that is
exactly.
like enough of a crumb for the fans. I think in particular where it's like. Yeah, that's such a good, I also think that it's like, it tears down the fourth wall because it acknowledges like, okay, like we know, mm-hmm. like the old version of the show is the version that you need to be reminded like can still potentially exist.
Right.
So, like, I think that's fine to tear down that aspect of the fourth wall. I think that's a good
like,
point.
I'm fine to see these housewives to go, like, maybe not Bethany at this point, but like, you know, a lot of these housewives have podcasts. Have them go on one of the Housewives podcasts and talk and kiki mm-hmm. and have a, you know, have and a ball and then and record that on the show. We can see the DTS mm-hmm. of what it takes to record some of these podcasts, which I know some of them, especially if they're in person, require a lot of logistic coordination, you know, and then they can have a coffee afterwards. Like there's so many ways to acknowledge the previous era without making it feel like it's like a power struggle in the way to do it and just be like, hey, these women are as important as always, right? Maybe we make the new background. I don't know. I'm not a graphic designer. Let me not go down. Right? I was like, let's do like a faded, you know, the old cast in the background
with
the New York City skyline. Then maybe I'll look, maybe
like
that feels
Gotham,
a little bit too much
like in the air. Yeah. Well, speaking of, you sort of end with this great metaphor where you compare it to Marvel and you say,
yeah.
I'm interested to read you your words really quickly. You say, Atlanta, like Marvel, is at risk of becoming a victim of its own culture-defining IP. And absent some rapid course correction, we are quickly approaching the moment where Robert Downey Jr. reveals himself as playing yet another character in the massive franchise.
Right.
Can you unpack that comparison to me? Because I think it's a great one, but I would love to hear more about
it. Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's a similar arc that happened with both kind of worlds, right? And, you know, I'm a passive Marvel person, but my brother is, like, huge to the comics and anime. So I get to see it from afar, I guess, right? You know, the Marvel world fans fought very hard to be taken seriously, right? You know, it's like, oh, that's just comic stuff, that's anime stuff, whatever, we don't care. Then they were taken seriously. Then the money came in, right? Mm-hmm. So now they're in every awards conversation. Every movie's making $1 billion. You can't avoid it because it is part of the cultural panopticon of it all, right? You know, so now we're all taking it seriously, whether or not we care about comics, right? And as time progresses, now you are the culture. You're no longer counterculture. How do you maintain that? It's impossible, right? Like you literally can't be counterculture when you're that big. And so it does start to taper, right? And when it starts to taper, I think that's when you start to see the struggle, right? Like, okay, how do we create the old magic? How do we get people to come back and put in seats, right? No one could have predicted a pandemic to like get people out the theaters, to be fair, right? You know, but then their result for that was make a million shows that we all watch online that you need to watch online to watch movies. And it became frustrating. So it's like, all right, well, what did work? Oh, big, compelling legacy stars who are rebooting, right? Let's bring Robert Downey Jr. back. It's like, wait, what? So like, what does this mean? Right? Like, it's like, so nothing means anything, but you're trying to get us to get on board anyway, right? And I feel like that with regards to the reality TV world. I've been in the reality TV world since the early aughts, or late aughts rather, right? And in that space, I've gone from seeing it covered in tiny blogs, you know, like the Just Jareds, the Paris Hiltons, right? To it slowly being covered by like more mainstream media sites like a Vulture, like a New York Magazine, like a, you know, Vanity Fair.
New York Times,
but that took, exactly. But that took some time, right? You would have never fathomed in 2013 that Tom Sandoval would have a full New York Times profile, right? You know, but that's a reality now, right? And so we got to that point. Reality TV culture is part of how we think about society and life, right? You know, most people, man, woman, or otherwise, right, will tell you, like, oh, I don't watch TV, but they'll be able to reference something from Real Housewives, not realizing that they're even referencing Real Housewives. That's how enmeshed it is. So now it's bigger than ever, but to replicate the like kind of homegrown feel, it's increasingly impossible because it's so big. So what do? You try to bring back, you know, the things that get people going, right? You try to be like, oh, we'll have this random guest appearance from so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And like what I feel, and I'll say, because I think other people have said it, you know, already, is that they're trying to kind of soft launch the like big return of NeNe. And I'm like, I love NeNe like deeply, right? So if she makes an off-camera appearance, I'll be front and center tuned in for it. But I do think that it's not necessarily like a guaranteed win, right? You know, it's just right. like something that I feel like people think, oh, this is what we're missing. And I think that people are going to end up being disappointed whether or not NeNe does great in a return, right? More so because we have such solid memories of how NeNe is so fast. I mean, how many times have we gone through that, like, bling, bling, bitches in that, but she's doing four knees in 10 seconds, right? You know, and it's impossible to replicate that. And I think that Bravo's going to try to do that. And I think they tried to do that in different ways with like when they originally tried to split Roni to Legacy and you, right?
But it
you
didn't know? Work.
And it didn't work. And so I think they're going to try it again. And I think that people are going to go up for it, but I'm not eager for it. I'll say that.
Yeah, you're right. People have this idea of what it would be, and it's not, it wouldn't be that. And you're right. It wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, but it just wouldn't mm-hmm. be the same.
Because we're not going to get NeNe stay-at-home mom of multiple children with a husband of good. We're getting NeNe, the widow, who, you know, now is
been
LA
through it in so many ways,
has
too.
Been through it with her children, with health scares, who's a LA veteran at this point, you know, has an agent, a manager, a booking team, a glam team that goes with her everywhere. That's a whole different experience. We're not going to get the same moments, and we shouldn't expect it.
No, and I think that, like, even if you watch her talk show on YouTube, which I think I'm so glad she's, like, back on a screen in some capacity, mm-hmm. like she's meant to be, but, like, she's a little different. She's different than she was on Atlanta in the heyday. She is. And, like,
right.
It's not a bad thing, but it's, I think you're right.
And I think there's ways to acknowledge that for those women, for the record, right? Like, I think about what Carlos King is doing, interviewing all the classic housewives so that they can tell their story on their own terms. Mm-hmm. I think it's such a great way. I think that there's, you know, like, not to shout out Carlos King again, but he did a similar concept with, like, girl groups. I forget the name of the show. I think it was called.
Yes.
Where he had, like, women from classic girl groups be able to try to do something different. I love that idea, right? You know?
Totally.
I think there's ways to do some version of it, and we just have to get there.
Yeah, in a parallel path, Bravo is sort of working on that with Love Hotel, with Crappy Lake, Ultimate Girls Trip, with Wife Swap coming up. Like, I think they realize that they have these opportunities to do these sort of, like, pretty low-lift spin-off moments where you can bring back somebody like Luann, you can bring back Sonia for, like, an 8-episode, half an hour arc or whatever it is. And, like, it's lower stakes. They're a little bit freed from some of the nostalgia and wanting that sort of continuation. It's a different thing, but it's still on Bravo, on our screens, alongside another housewife. Like, I think that does a lot of work for the network, I think, in terms of having those kind of side opportunities, you know?
Right. And then even if you don't watch those shows, which I do watch them, I have a concept about Love Hotel, but Crappy Lake was an entertaining watch. And even if you don't watch them, they end up doing so much press and they end up back on Watch What Happens Live.
Yeah.
And you get like that part of it either way.
It scratches the itch for sure. Well, Shamira, I think we've kind of covered all of our bases. But again, thank you so much for writing that piece. It really kind of opened my brain to a lot of these big ideas. And I really appreciate you coming on today to unpack it even more.
No. Thank you for reading it. And I'm always happy to ramble about reality television. So happy for the invite.
Of course. Where can people follow you, find all your work, find all your writing? Because as you said, you write and recap a lot.
Yeah. So if you are paying attention to reality television stuff, you'll mostly find me at Vulture writing about reality television. That's my main home for it. In general, my Twitter is @_ShamGod. That's ShamGod with one M. And my Instagram is Shamira the First. So usually you can see what I'm up to there, where I talk about other TV, film, a lot of music, conversations. Feel free to follow.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Shamira, thank you so much for doing this, and have a good rest of your week.
Thank you so much, Gibson.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.
Sleeping hot? Waking up sweaty at 2 a.m.? It's not you. It's your sheets. And Care Aloha is your answer. They're the original for bamboo sheets that are naturally breathable, moisture-wicking, and luxuriously soft, designed to keep hot sleepers cool and comfortable all night long. You can feel the difference in how much cooler you sleep. Care Aloha's innovative bamboo fabric pulls heat away from your body, so you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer without cranking the AC. Improve your sleep tonight. Shop Care Aloha bamboo sheets now at carealoha.com. That's CARILOHA.com. Cooler sleep starts with Care Aloha.